grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 291 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host, coming to you live from the fabulous Austin, Texas, the little blue dot in the middle of the big red state. We have some great stuff for you tonight. We have with us Erin Montgomery. She is a contactee as well as, she is a contactee as well as author of the amazing book, Dirty Little Secret, Confessions of an Alien Contactee. We will be talking about her experiences throughout her life, as well as what it has been like to not only author the book, but be out there sharing this experience with the world. What it's like, a lot of people really don't realize the personal impact that it has on somebody, the personal impact that doing things even like this show have on families, you know. Like even this show, sometimes whenever I go to have certain guests on, like whenever we had Anonymous on, that was one of those I got the contact from my NSA connection, and I was like, I literally had to take it to my wife. I was like, I have to talk to you because you share the same server as me with your show. Are you ready to possibly swat some flies away digitally whenever we have Anonymous on? So yeah, like you have to be ready for things to happen in your life in a different way. Once you start bringing this knowledge about, once you, even start sharing these stories with family members, with friends. So we are going to be digging deep into what it is to be a contactee, what that has been like for a lifetime for Erin Montgomery, author of Dirty Little Secret. Before we do that, please, folks, please do not forget the Dudes and Beer podcast is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you are a fan of podcasting like I am, want to start up a podcast for yourself, friends, family, fun, church, school, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. That is all we do there is podcasting, whether it's workshops, training, consultation, audits, even editing and production. That's all that PodcastCadet.com does. Stop on by today. They do one-on-one podcast consultation with you. They will take your podcast, whether it's beginning, whether it's been there for a year or so, find out exactly what you need and pair you up one-on-one with consultants to get you moving in the right direction, whether it's distribution, monetization, production, what have you. They will hook you up. PodcastCadet.com is the website. The code is DUDES20 to save 20% off your cart. While you are there, please make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. DudesandBeer.com is the website. Our guest this evening has a book, like I said, the amazing book that I have been reading over the last week, Dirty Little Secret. If you head over to dudesandbeer.com/store, you can find it right there on the homepage because it is available on Amazon and we are an affiliate. So stop on by dudesandbeer.com/store, buy your copy of Dirty Little Secret, Confessions of an Alien Contactee, available both on Kindle as well as paperback. Now, it has, of course, been a little while since we have heard from our good friend John Bowne, but as the election draws nigh, as things like that begin to happen in our culture, in our society, we will, of course, begin to hear more and more and more from our good friend John Bowne. He has a fantastic report for us talking about some of the media slant that's been going on regarding a recent shooting. It's been really interesting, and we try to talk about this stuff all the time. We don't get political, but what we do point out is the fact that the media is more than willing to get political. The media is more than willing to use your brain waves against you. They are more than willing to flame any fire of conflagration that is there, especially at times like this. That is why we will be having the amazing Professor Richard B. Spence, actual professor of conspiracy theory, as well as espionage and the history of espionage between the U.S. and Russia, teaches the great course on Amazon Prime on the great courses. Stop on by and check that out, because he's going to be coming on the show soon to talk about usurped election processes and how this has been happening with elections for years across the globe, where we go in and stick our fingers in the pie and play around with it. So to hear the media going out there doing things and moving in that way is not a surprise whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. This is a great report from our good friend John Bowne.
All the left needs is a Hitler, Mussolini, Pol Pot, Chairman Mao style leader to rally them to a full-blown revolutionary violent overthrow of the United States. That voice will likely arise from the crumbling ESPN ranks that psychopaths like Keith Olbermann graduate from, jockeying for position with their political theater.
The terrorist Trump must be defeated, must be destroyed, must be devoured at the ballot box. And then he and his enablers and his supporters and his collaborators and the Mike Lees and the William Barrs and the Sean Hannitys and the Mike Pences and the Rudy Giuliani's and the Kyle Rittenhouses and the Amy Coney Barretts must be prosecuted and convicted and removed from our society while we try to rebuild it.
Spewing totalitarian nonsense that sounds vaguely familiar.
Adolf Hitler's first written comments calling for the annihilation of Jews, and it's signed by Hitler himself. The letter was penned decades before the Holocaust in 1919, when Hitler was a German soldier, but it reveals his early hatred of Jewish people. In one section, he writes that Jews should be denied rights, with the final aim being the uncompromising removal of Jews altogether.
And the Kyle Rittenhouses and the Amy Coney Barretts must be prosecuted and convicted and removed from our society while we try to rebuild it. The fight is not just to win an election, but to win it by enough to chase, at least for a moment, Trump and the maggots off the stage.
It is purely un-American hysterical disinformation that continues to fuel what transpired at a Denver, Colorado communist soup drive for the homeless, a drive that should have been appropriately titled a hurl soup cans at concerned Americans and defunded police event.
A lot of those guys were from UADF, United American Defense Force. The other side, the Communist Party, started attacking the cops probably within, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
20 minutes. I saw soup cans. I was up there speaking. Soup cans were flying at the cops. Again, they said they're doing a soup drive for the homeless. No, they weren't.
And as a BLM mental patient hurled threats and insults at patriots.
Makes me, brother. Walk up to me and makes me, makes me, mother. Makes me, mother. I got the right to stand my ground. Makes me.
Can you talk?
Go ahead and...
And as a patriot appeared to defend himself with pepper spray after the gun had been drawn, that patriot was shot point blank in the head. The BLM instigator celebrated as he left the scene, only to be detained shortly thereafter. The instigator had deceptively been wearing a Black Guns Matter shirt and appears to be the same agitator from a Bernie Sanders rally. Surprisingly, the shot was not fired by a left-wing radical Antifa BLM supporter. A patriot was reportedly murdered in cold blood by the bodyguard of a Denver 9 News producer. Just so we're clear on this, America, patriotic Americans aren't merely being shot in cold blood by Marxists that are supported by the Democratic Party and the Democratic candidates running for the highest office in the land.
Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not
kidding.
Militia.
They're not going to stop. And everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. It is going to, they're not going to stop before election day in November, and they're not going to stop after election day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not. And we should not.
The liberal 9 News Denver media has now become the center of an investigation where the life of an American citizen was snuffed out in broad daylight by the tyranny of a Mockingbird media goon.
On the other side,
the Denver Communist Party, along with self-described Black Lives Matter and Antifa.
Well, they call it a patriot muster, but that's, you know, they used patriot instead of saying racist, or patriot instead of saying nationalist. So, you know, we see through that.
A security guard contracted by Nine News through the company Pinkerton got into an altercation with another man.
There was a verbal altercation that transpired. Firearm was discharged. Individual was shot and later pronounced deceased.
It has been a practice by Nine News to hire private security guards as our crews have been covering protests over the last several months in Denver. Denver police say no one else was arrested at the rallies.
The bodies of people, groups of people whom nobody elected, never. As a matter of fact, most of the people don't like them at all, and yet they exist. One of such group is media. Who elected them? How come they have so much power, almost monopolistic power on your mind? They can rape your mind. But who elected them? How come they have a nerve to decide what is good and what is bad for the elected by you, President, and his administration? Who the hell are they?
John Bowne reporting.
Always an interesting take from John Bowne, and I know, like I said, we try not to get political on this show. John has his way of looking at things. We all have our own way of looking at things. The main thing to look at there is that both sides are spewing nothing but hate, and it's really, really hard to hear anything amongst that rabble. So as we approach our presidential election, we need to remember the good words of our guest from a couple years ago, where we were warned not to have hero worship, not to look for a savior in a candidate, because they're just politicians. That's it. Nothing more. They are not a savior. They can't do anything to change a lot of that, as far as a president goes. So, you know, but it is interesting to see that there was the horrible case of the gentleman losing his life at the hands of the security guard of the media. And to know that that is what has just kind of skirted underneath everything was that this guy was shot and it was a media security guard that did it. Were it either side, BLM or the Patriots, you would be hearing it on both news networks like crazy. But because it is the media themselves, you hear it from just about nobody. And that is something to highly consider. Now, our guest this evening is the author of... I lost my book. Our guest this evening is the author of Dirty Little Secret, Confessions of an Alien Contactee. She has been contacted by aliens and been dealing with alien contact since her childhood. We will be going over the timeline of her life, things like that, as we have her on this evening. Please welcome to the show, for the first time, Erin Montgomery. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing good. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on this evening, for sharing your story, especially for sharing your story, not just in your book, but for going around and sharing your story, going around and talking with people, doing virtual conferences, that kind of stuff. I think it is really interesting to see this community of disclosure and truth really taking to that like ducks to water. It's fantastic.
This really does feel like disclosure to me. You know, it just, I am being pushed. I'm being drawn. I'm being like forced almost to talk. You got to talk. You got to tell your story. Mm. You got to let people understand this is happening. And it, you know, it's coming from people like me. It's like a grassroots movement.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really is, like I was saying at the beginning of the show, it's something that, as more is coming out, people are more willing to talk. We have been getting more and more deathbed confessions as time has been going on from a good 50 years ago. And more people our age are coming out talking about things that they have experienced their whole life. People are going to therapy and finding things out that they never knew had happened to them. And it's really interesting. I have had friends that it's happened to. I myself have situations in my life where somebody has a completely, totally different experience of an exact same moment. Like completely different experience, completely different memory. So much so that like when I tried to contact them later in life, they were like, "Wow, I'm really surprised that you contacted me because of this really awkward situation between us." And I was like, "Wow, I don't remember that. Like, what are you even talking about?" So yeah, it's interesting to see you bring some of those things up in your book, Dirty Little Secret, for you to really bear all. When it comes to that. So let's, I guess, start at the beginning here, Aaron. When do you first remember contact? What is contact like for you? Because it can be different for different people.
Right. Well, one of the main things that I think is hard to understand for a lot of people who don't have these experiences is that time is very fluid. You know, time does not exist outside of our human understanding of this linear progression of time. So even like a simple question of when did this start is weird, because I didn't understand that I was having experiences until I was in my late teens and starting, you know, in college.
Wow.
But as those memories came out and I understood what was going on, I saw that this stuff was going on with me from a very young age. And so with the, you know, the earliest memory that I have most recently received, which, you know, just out of time, I just most recently received memories or remembered things from when I was four. So,
wow.
So that's my earliest memory of contact.
Okay. And, you know, it's interesting to me because I've got a son who is right at 3.5 years old. And I'm 45. My first memories are right up around 4 years old. And there are a couple of really strange ones in there. One of them was, I remember when I was a very young child, we lived in a trailer house out in Crosby, Texas. And we had a swing set out in the back, and it as vividly as the sun rises every day, I distinctly remember seeing this dark, devilish figure out at the swing set beckoning me to come out.
That doesn't surprise me. I've heard that story in different formats. Even right now,
I almost just dropped my drink all over my broadcast. I'm not even joking. Like, as I said it, chills went up my spine because I saw it in front of me. It is that vivid. And that's a memory that goes back unchanged my entire life. So nobody in my family remembers me telling that. Remembers me saying anything about it. Nobody in my family had the same experience living at the same property. So some of the things that you talk about in your book to me are very much akin in that way, where you've had the same experience as someone else being somewhere, but they had a separate experience. And It can be very confusing. It can be very strange. How is it that, I guess, you go about figuring it? Because like you said, the memory from 4 years old just came back to you. How do you go about receiving your contact? How do these moments come about to you?
Sometimes it's in a conversation. Somebody will say something, and whatever it is that they said just spark a picture or, you know, a thought. This memory went from when I was four, happened when I saw a photograph of a friend when he was a little boy. And as soon as I saw that picture, I was like, oh, I knew you when I was little then. And then I had like the whole image of where I was at when I first saw him. And I was approximately 4 years old. I was sitting on the floor of a room that was very white and sterile and just unadorned. It was just white. I don't remember anything else.
Yeah.
But I was sitting on the floor with several children, and we were playing with blocks, kind of maneuvering them in the air in a very anti-gravity type of way. And there was a doorway to my right, and it was a rounded doorway, as I usually see. And this little boy with an ET with him, I would say a gray, I don't really remember what the entity looked like, but I saw him, a little toe-headed boy, blonde hair, kind of bowl cut, and he pointed at me and said, you're for me, and he went on about his business, and that was just like 3 seconds of memory that just popped into my head as soon as I saw his photograph.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, and it's interesting because you mention a round doorway. Let's go into that a little bit. What is that for you? Is that something that is usual whenever you have one of these experiences? Is that kind of a hallmark for you where that is when you realize the difference between normal everyday or a normal recollection and a communication or what you would consider a contact?
That's a good question. I think with that experience, it was the anti-gravitational block playing that it kind of clued it off, like, this isn't normal. This isn't something that you experience on Earth or, you know, in your everyday life. I do often see, you know, the rounded hallways and walls and things like that on ships. So when I saw that, I knew what I was remembering, yeah. However, most of the time, to me, it's like a metallic color instead of the bright white that I remember in that instant.
Okay. And how long have these experiences been coming to you? Because, like you were saying, most of this has been recollection within the last bit of time. You weren't necessarily... were you talking with beings when you were of a younger age, things like that? Were you having those kind of experiences?
Apparently I was, but I didn't remember. When I was coming to terms with these things, I think I was probably mid-30s, and I was at a restaurant with my father, and I was telling him, hey, I've remembered these. This is what happened. Isn't this interesting? And he's just blinking at me like, wow, this is something. But I want to tell you about this time that you were about 7 years old. And I walked down the hallway of the house and I heard you talking to somebody in your room and you wanted to die so that you could go home. And I said, what?
Wow.
And he said, yeah, you were talking about being dead at the age of, you know, 7, 8. And I had the surreal experience of explaining to somebody that young with long braids why it's important to live here on Earth right now.
Wow.
And so it makes me think, okay, so I was talking to somebody, and interestingly enough, that age around 7 or 8, whenever it was that he had heard me talking to that person, was right after a very traumatic experience that I had on ship, which I didn't remember until later.
And let's go into that experience a little bit.
All right. Yeah. So I've had some recall of this experience. I knew I was taken out of my room by gray type aliens. You know, there's so many different species that look similar. I don't know who they are. I don't know where they're from, but these particular gray-like aliens took me out of my bedroom and floated me. You know, in my recall, it was down the hall, outside of the house, and into a ship. And I could not really remember what happened after that. At the point where I went to Yvonne Smith for a regression, a hypnotic regression, to specifically pull this stuff out, like, am I going crazy? Is this really happening? Please, I need to know. And I told her I wanted to go to the basis of the trauma because I was displaying symptoms of PTSD. Now, I have had other types of trauma in my life, like domestic violence and things like that. So I was no longer sleeping. I could not have the lights off. I was terrified that they were going to come get me. And I would huddle up in the corner of my room you know, in the bed against the wall, just watching the door and the window saying, please don't come, please don't come. And now I know that's ridiculous because they could have gotten me through the wall. But, you know, it felt safe at the time.
Yeah.
And so through the regression, we went specifically to this time that caused me the most trauma. And I was 7 years old, laying in bed, you know, trying to sleep, but this really bright light was coming through the window. And at the time I thought, well, that's not the moon. And that was when I realized there was that being right next to me on the side of the bed. And it was, she felt female. I didn't, you know, there's no outward indication of
yeah.
gender, but she was a female type, and, or perhaps just felt nurturing. I don't know if it's just our predilection to think that of that as a female.
Yeah.
And there was somebody standing in the doorway, and then there was another little dude at the end of the bed. And he put his hand under my foot, and however, you know, whatever science magic thing they have, I was able to float at that time, and they levitated me off the bed and into the hallway. And here's where things get kind of interesting, from recall to hypnotic regression recall. Instead of going down the hallway and out the front door, we went straight up through the ceiling. And I could feel my molecules like separating as I passed through the solid materials as I ascended into the sky. And, you know, the ship was above the house. We entered the bottom of the ship. That was like a, you know, the there was a light that was coming down, but the light was like an opening. And so we went through that. And then they took me into a room. And here's where I noticed the, you know, the rounded hallways and things. It's like being on the inside of a milk truck, if you can think of what that would look like. Very shiny, very austere, very metallic. And then into this exam room, which to me resembled like a dentist's office. There was a chair, there was you know, some like counters and shelves and drawers and things like that, as far as I can remember. And then they proceeded to strap me into the chair.
Okay. Yeah.
And, at, you know, at 7 years old, I'm getting strapped in, and I'm thinking, this is kind of, I don't really like this. Why are you tying me down? And at that point, that is when a different type of being entered the room. And he was very, very tall and thin, and long arms and legs, and I cannot recall the look of his face. I do not see his face. I think it's because I was so afraid that my mind is not allowing me to fully see what he looked like. But I came unglued at that point in time, and they had to work really hard to calm me down. And once I was calm enough, that's when that really tall creature inserted something into the roof of my mouth. I'm going to assume it was an implant. It was like a round gelatinous, like biological thing in a fork type of device, and it went into the roof of my mouth.
Wow.
And yeah, so that right there scared the crap out of me, and I think that really, really changed my world at that point.
I would absolutely imagine so, Aaron. I mean, if you were 7 years old when that happened to you, and you were what age when that was recovered? When that realization of reality came to you?
I was 40.
Wow. And that's yeah. that's a lot, and that's the thing, is that is a lot of time to literally not process something. And the only right. way I can psychologically put that, folks, is imagine running into a thorn bush when you're 7 years old and having a thorn embedded, and you don't necessarily feel this thing festering underneath your skin, but there it is for 40 years, and the doctor finds it one day, and now it's kind of a little bit of trouble, you know? And mm-hmm. when you mm-hmm. compound that, like you said, with other things that have happened in your life, that kind of stuff, that's when the concept, literally, of the dirty little secret comes around. You know, of do I share this story? Do I even think to talk about this? Sev Talk is one of my favorite guests that we have on the show. I love her. She is so great. Such a positive energy. talking about connecting with the source, talking with interdimensional beings. People have to remember, whenever you say extraterrestrial, it's kind of like saying paranormal. Like, that's a yes. Like, paranormal just means it's outside of the normal. It doesn't have to be a ghost. It doesn't have to be an alien. It just means it's not normal. Like, it's not what you see every single day. That's all that that means. To say extraterrestrial means it's just not from here. We don't know what it is. We don't know from where they came. Some people get messages about where they came. Some people get very distinct messages. You are one of those people that have, instead of kind of like Sev, communicating and contacting and gleaning these messages, you are much more along the experiencer line, where these things have happened to you and were not necessarily an invited situation.
No, they definitely were not fun. Definitely were not fun. I have gone through a lot of things that I have, like, why? Why me? Why yeah. have I gone through this? Why have you done these things to me? And this is one of the things that my book, you know, purposely does, is go through the process of how do I go from this feeling of trauma
yeah.
to being okay with what I have experienced, and then moving into that inviting and learning and growing. And you know, just expanding more on Sev's level as well, far as that goes, which is where I am now. But it took me a long time to get here.
Well, and that's just it. It takes a long time for anybody to get anywhere in their life, you know, whether it's a positive means or a negative means. It takes a long time for us to be in the groove of life that we are in, necessarily. You know, even yourself as a librarian with a career, things like that, you have explored other options in your life as things have come along. This is something and really a personal mission that has come along to you later in life. You know, this is like we were saying, it's not necessarily something that you've been doing knowledgeably since you were 13. You know?
Correct. I had no idea. Just sort of, you know, very weird things have happened to me my entire life. I just never understood why.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even with my career as a librarian, all of a sudden I had this idea that I had to switch jobs. Mm. I had to go back to school, and I had no idea where the drive came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now that I have switched careers after, you know, receiving my master's degree in marriage and family therapy and working on a certificate and all of these other things, in a full new career, and understanding that this probably also was not my choice. I think that I was pushed in this direction, you know, and it's okay. You know, right now I'm like, okay, if I just do what I'm told to do at this point, I succeed. So I'm just going to go with flow.
Well, and that's a beautiful way to put that, Aaron. I tell Sev frequently, one of the reasons I love having people like her on, one of the reasons I love having people like you on this show, is because people need to not just open their minds, they need to learn to open their heart. And by that, I mean, get rid of your walls, people. Get rid of them, because they're about to be, like, dashed away come very soon in this universe. The truths that we are learning, not only scientifically, but beyond that right now, sociologically as humanity, are above and beyond anything that we have had in millennia. So be prepared for something. And when you're talking about people like you, Aaron, when you're talking about people like Sev, whenever you say it was something that you were called to, like, you, for you, it was a compulsion, not a decision, to change jobs.
Right, exactly.
You were moved,
and that happens time and time and time again in my life. And if I follow the compulsions, everything lines up beautifully, and I know that I will be successful.
Yeah.
And if I push against it, then I end up doing it anyways, because that's what I'm supposed to do. But I have fought and caused a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
As I try to avoid it.
All your fault. All your fault.
Because I get in my own way, and that is me trying to, and often that actually comes from trauma, because I feel like I have to be in control, because I was out of control and hurt, And so I feel like I have to control everything. However, being okay with things and letting it flow, and I'm showing, being shown time and time again that I am protected and I am safe and I will succeed.
Yes.
Is really, really vital. And this is like the message that I am receiving constantly is humans, especially experiencers who have gone through this, need to process that trauma. We can no longer function under these ideas of fear and that fight or flight reaction because we cannot openly speak to them in that state.
Exactly.
If we do not heal, we cannot hear what it is that they have to say and work with them on a one-on-one basis.
And you know, that's kind of the whole point that I was making at the beginning of the show with John Bowne's report. Whether you take it politically or not, the whole message is, hey, man, look at this paradigm of utter fear that they are shoving down your throat. Who gave them that permission? Like, you're...
Oh, and that makes you wonder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, who gave them the permission to control your mind and your emotions that way? And for you to do this, for you to be writing your book, Dirty Little Secret, for you to be out on the trail, doing the digital conferences, doing the meetups, doing all that kind of stuff, doing like basically digital author readings, that kind of thing, is fantastic because it really is that stealing moment where it is go forth, tell people about it. One of the reasons I love having Seb on is because her realization came later as well, just like yours. I myself had a moment in my life where, and quite a few, that I came to recognize as the presence of at least what I know as my God with me. And one of those was when I was called to enter the seminary at a very young age. And if you go around telling people, Aaron, I was like 17 and, you know, heard God talk to me, heard like the Price is Right music and heard myself get called down onto the floor and I ran to the floor, you know, to be on the Price is Right. Yeah. Like, who wouldn't run down there if you're called? Come on. If you hear that music in your head, you're going to run to the podium. Like, it's going to happen. I'm sorry, people. I don't care how stony your heart is. The day that something like this happens to you and that realization happens, you will go running to it and wonder where it has been. So for people like you, for people like Sev to be out there sharing these things, I think is one of the most brave and beautiful things in the world. To be giving
thank you.
Comfort and emotional shelter to other experiencers, other people who have gone through this, to say, A, you are not alone. B, like you say in the book, am I crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Am I crazy? Am I crazy because I heard and felt God in that moment and moments after? So,
and then are you crazy for talking about it?
Yeah. Or for even giving it credence. And I'm one of those people that's like, I call you crazy for not giving it credence because I experienced it and it is real. So, for this to be real, for, aliens of any sort, whether they be from a parallel dimension, whether they be from a planet or a galaxy far, far away, that doesn't really matter to me. None of that is beyond reason, because I have had my own experience. I have been down that same road of calling, so to speak, where I couldn't unring the bell. That's the only way I can put it. You can't unhear
the bell when it's wrong. Point, yeah.
You know?
Right. How can a person who has experienced these types of things negate it all and be okay? I mean, we can't. We cannot go back.
Yeah. No.
Or if we do, we're gonna be highly emotionally disturbed.
Well, we literally at that point are negating a part of ourselves.
Right.
And that's dangerous psychologically. As someone who is studying therapy and being licensed, you know better than anybody. That is a dangerous, dangerous road to go down. You cannot do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So let's really start kind of cracking the nut real quick, Aaron. No pun intended there, for either of us. of what this has been like for you, to start exploring this and really start getting into the therapy that you're going through, what that has been like for you. What has it been like for your family? What has it been like for your friends? What is it? I mean, like I'm saying, these things, these roots run deep. When you decide to go on missions like this in life, it doesn't just affect you. It is a ripple and waves going on around you as you swim through it. So take our
absolutely.
Audience down that
absolutely.
Journey a little bit and what
you
it's
know,
been like
yeah.
for you.
As I started to understand what was happening to me, I was married to my first husband at the time, and you know, he pretty much thought I was just Looney Tunes and had all these crazy ideas. And I told him, you know what, if I am not hurting myself and if I'm not hurting anybody else, you need to let me just explore where I need to go.
Yeah.
And he agreed with me. However, I don't, you know, the marriage didn't last. In fact, none of my marriages have lasted, and it makes me wonder, you know, what really is wrong with me. But I don't think that this is uncommon with people who have these amazing and extraordinary experiences because you can't have ordinary. We can't have ordinary. There's strange yeah. things that happen all the time. And coming to terms with it and, you know, and then explaining it to your children and then hearing these stories from your children. There was a little man in my room last night, you know, things
yeah.
like that
yeah.
makes things so bizarre. And now my children, as you know, after the book came out, though, I know they're both proud of me for achieving this. Neither one of them want anything to do with anything that I have to say. And that's okay, because when I was their age, I felt the same way.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
they're in their, you know, one's 20, one's 20, almost 25. And yeah, no, it's, you don't want to face it at this point in time. It's very scary. And you know that stuff is happening because you're waking up with bruises, you've got missing time, and they've both experienced that. And sometimes they've experienced it the same day that I have experienced something. So, I mean, we know. And they get very mad at me when I say, do you have any bruises? Like, Mom, just stop. We're not going there. And, you know, and it makes things really difficult. Like, you know, doing the radio shows or doing a podcast or, you know, any sort of interviews, my youngest who lives with me just kind of walks away and like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. If I
yeah.
have something exciting, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be doing this talk. I don't want to hear it, Mom. Okay. And so it makes it really hard for me to express myself.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. And that's coming from a kid of a single mom who was going through her own thing, working two jobs and going to college and trying to be a teacher and things like that. Like, I can definitely see that. And they will loop back around, believe me. Because
oh, I feel like they will.
Yeah. eventually it will be like, hey, you know, those things you used to talk about. Yeah. But really I think it's more it's also more the fact of right now they're on their journey of life and you've kind of gone on an adjunct journey, you know?
Yes. Yeah. There's like dissonance
yeah.
going on. Absolutely.
Well, absolutely. Because I mean, you have, like I said, it is a stealing moment and that's the double E L E folks. Like you have steeled your resolve. You've changed your paradigm. You no longer, like you said a minute ago, Aaron, you cannot accept the norm anymore. The norm is mediocre.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with vanilla pudding. I love vanilla pudding. But there's a whole lot of puddings out there is what you really come to realize. And sometimes you want something other than
vanilla
because you know it's there.
Exactly.
Just
exactly.
Because you don't know it.
Yeah.
Just,
and in all areas of my life, I strive for this higher plane of things. Like, it's got to be, there has to be some sort of spiritual level to everything that I do, whether it's relationships, whether it's a creative endeavor, what, you know, it doesn't matter. Yes. There has to be a spiritual bent or I'm not interested.
Same. Yeah, I am very much that way. And, you know, one of the things that I loved was the description that you have in your bio of Starseed, because that is very, very much the story of Starseeds. It is the fact that it's almost that full on Virgo concept of, you know, everything is lived via that passion and via that connection to the beyond through that passion. And that connection to something greater than yourself. I find myself occasionally kind of going ire off on my wife and, you know, like, I'm trying to manifest something over here, man. I don't need your energy. I don't need all that reality in my face. I'm trying to manifest something. Get out of here. But that is very much what it is. And like you said, it can be hard for a lot of people to understand until they've had that aha moment in their own way, in their own time, you know. What was it for you, Aaron, that was really that aha moment, that moment where you realized that these weren't just strange memories, they were something else?
That's a good question. I mean, I have been working on that. Like, I know that things are happening, but the moment that I knew everything was real, you know, long before the regression that I did, which didn't negate me feeling crazy the whole time, but it was 2002, and I was visiting my mother with both of my children. They were 2 years old and seven. Yeah, 2 and 7. And we were visiting my mother in Colorado, because I'm in Roswell, New Mexico. Irony, the irony of the universe. Anyways, my mom and I were standing outside, and it was August, so the Leonid meteor shower was starting, and we were looking in the sky, and I had that feeling like, oh, they're coming tonight. I knew that they were coming tonight, and that is one of the stealings. As he said, I steeled myself and said, I am not going to go to sleep. I'm going to wait. I'm going to stay awake, and I'm going to wait for them to walk through the store. And I did. I did. I stayed awake. It was hard, but I stayed awake until like 3 something in the morning. And like my brother's cat, you know, my brother had moved out, but his cat kept pacing back and forth in front of the door. So I knew that the energy was weird, and I knew something was going to happen. And lo and behold, they did. They came into the room, and I was not afraid. And that surprised me probably more than anything else. There were three very small gray-type beings with very large heads and very large black eyes, and just they had like a childlike innocence about them, and they ran in the room with an exuberance. One jumped on the bed, and I swear I was enfolded in the most amazing feeling of love like I have never felt in my life.
Interesting.
And yeah, and one of the, you know, the one that jumped on the bed came, and he crawled up close, and he put his hand on my chest and said, in 37, you're going to have a problem here. And I thought, okay, that's weird. In 37, what? Days, months, years, what?
Lunar cycles,
so I didn't quite understand.
Help. Anything.
Yeah, like I'm not quite understanding what he's saying, but then, you know, I kind of blacked out, and then was on a ship, you know, all the things that happens when you are taken happened. I don't remember a lot of it, and some of it was dreamlike. I remember looking at mood rings for whatever reason at that point, just, you know, my mind trying to make sense of what was happening. But being awake and feeling that love and understanding that maybe my fears are not founded,
Interesting.
And maybe, you know, but also knowing it was real. That was the moment.
And you know, very much the same story, like you were saying earlier, from Sev, where she finally had the realization that the way she was viewing her experiences was through the wrong lens. That the experiences that she had had that had scared her whole life, the day that she realized and bridged that connection between the two, it was no longer looking at things through the eyes of a physical abuse or a violation.
Right.
And it's right. Interesting, because if you go through, I'm just going to read a little excerpt here. I want your permission on air before I before I go through here and do a reading of your work. But this is from page 28 of your book, talking about one of your beings on a mystery tribe to Arabella. Back to that mystery drive to Arabella. As of yet, I am the only one out of three that has been able to recall any of the missing time. I see about 20 beings stretched across the highway in front of us, small, gray-type alien beings. Their skin looks like bruises, that mottled red, purple, blue, yellow, greenish hue we humans get when we have been injured. There is one being close to the ground, some color, some large head and large eyes. But when I look to the ground, there's another creature, oddly more like a tick, flat and round with its head tilted up to the front. Is it on a leash? Like, you start going into some descriptions, but it's interesting because your experience here sounds much more fear-based than the experience that you just described.
Yes. And further along in that recollection, I was crying and very upset. And interestingly enough, they were trying to calm me down. They were trying to calm me down, like, it's okay, just chill out. We're not even here for you. I think they were working with my friend at that point. But I don't remember much else other than just kind of being comforted, like, just calm down, God.
Well,
it was
this,
the attitude
this
that I
those,
got from them.
This is one of those that I was referencing where you said that you remembered things differently from other people. Now, did that lead you to any kind of self-doubt? Was this a situation, just for our listeners out there that have not read, was this a situation that came, your realization of this come before or after your realization that things were okay with these experiences?
Honestly, my idea of things being okay took a very long time to cycle around. I'd be okay and I wasn't okay. I'd be okay and I wasn't okay. And that lasted 20 years. This was right at the time that I started to be okay. I was already writing the book. At this point, I had a couple of chapters under my belt, and we had hiked up to the crash site here in Roswell the day before. It was my husband, at the time, my friend, and another friend, all of us experiencers, and some weird stuff happened while we were up there. But on this drive, the next day, it was my husband, my friend, and I, and we had a moment where about half an hour disappeared, and we were on a time crunch. We needed to be somewhere on time, and we had lost about half an hour, which really kind of messed us up.
Oh, wow.
But I was the only one who could say, I know what happened. And my thoughts behind this are the fact that I have actively worked on putting the trauma to bed, working through the trauma, and being okay with contact, where the other two are not okay with it. I know that my friend who was with us more actively works on it than my ex-husband, but I think that is why I had recall and they did not.
Interesting.
Because I was processing it.
Yeah, and I mean, Same exact experience. Nobody that I was with had the experience I had when I had my divine moments. Not a single person. Not a single person I was with shared that experience viscerally the way that I did. They did not feel that presence. They did not feel that warmth come over their body. They did not feel the vibrational force that was moving them. I'm not going to say necessarily hear the voice, but know the voice. That's the only way I can put it. It's a knowing. And it really is a shared space, a true entanglement of being is almost the only way I can put it, whereby you're receiving this divine or this otherworldly thing. It's like you're a conduit. And it's strange because, yeah, the people around you aren't experiencing it. Like we talked about in our last episode with Sev, it's very much a vibrational frequency.
And Absolutely.
I mean, a prime example is, I mean, I love my wife. I love her very much. Her ears are not trained the way that mine are. I have been an audio-video engineer for the last 25 years of my life, almost. So my ears for live audio have been trained to hear everything. And because of that, like, I hear my neighbors having conversations outside. You know? Like, my hearing is so attuned, it's crazy. But she can't hear that. She can't hear most of the sounds that I hear because her range of hearing just hasn't been, that muscle hasn't really been flexed, so to speak. You know, it's not that she's not capable of it. Through the same training, through the same time of being in that environment for that reason, she would be able to do the same thing, you know? And
right.
Very, very much what Sev says regularly. It's not that her experiences are not unique and special, but that her and what she's doing is something that everybody can do. We can all tap into that other parallel place, that other vibration. To experience these things.
Absolutely. I actually had an experience not too long ago. I was at a friend's house and we were discussing one of his friends that had just passed away. And, you know, along with all of this stuff that happens in my life with contact, paranormal happens all the time. So I have learned to recognize when beings walk into the world that I can't, or into the room that I can't necessarily see with my physical eyes. I could feel his friend approach and I felt it in my heart. It was a vibrational thing, you know, as you have already said. And I am like, okay, did you feel that? And he said, yeah, my ears just, yeah, you know, the pressure in the room changed. And I said, that's exactly it. Yep. Your friend is here.
Yeah.
And he said, this happens to me often. I'm like, well, then you often have guests. This is how it feels. And so, and it's just that recognition of, oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
That helps to open people up a little bit more.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the way I one of the big ways I explain it to people, Aaron, is synergy with musicians. And I myself as a musician, as most people can see with my set behind me here in my home studio. But there are very few people that I have been able to make my electronic music with because of the process that happens in my studio and literally the vibration that is happening in the studio. Most people, by the time we get done, quote, jamming for 20 or 30 minutes, feel very uncomfortable. and very uneasy. Not that they don't appreciate what we created, and they're not like, oh wow, that was cool. But it's more like, oh man, that felt weird. Like that felt like kind of uncomfortable, you know. A few years ago, I ran across a very rare bird where we got together, we did some fun stuff for an afternoon, and then we listened back to it. And he kind of looked at me, and I was like, oh, God, man, here we go again. And literally, he was like, whenever this one part in the song happened, I saw his ears perk up, and he looked at me with one eye, and he was like, do you feel that? And I was like, yeah. He's like, that was cool, man. You think we can make that happen again? And I was like, oh, I guarantee you we can make that happen again. You want to make that happen again? He was like, yeah. And we literally wrote like 4 or 5 albums in 6 months. It was insane. It was one of the most productive half years musically of my life. Because we literally just syncopated on this wavelength. And what most people found uncomfortable, he was tuned into. And it's very much the same thing, where most people would consider this moment, that moment of the divine presence, that moment of starting to have that recollection of the memory that you're having. Mm-hmm. Most people would run from that, not run to it. Or not run to the call of figuring out what it is, Aaron. That is extraordinarily brave of you to do. To run to that instead of away from it.
I guess I never really thought about that. People scared the crap out of you. Now you're going to pursue them.
Yeah, now you're going to pursue them and find out what they were. You know, like that's some pretty superhero status stuff there, Aaron. When you think about that psychologically and therapeutically, like that is some true superhero status business. So, what was it that really brought you to the point of flipping script like that and being willing to chase after it? Instead of running away from it, instead of suppressing these memories, because like you said, you've gone through some regression therapy. You've been to some therapy sessions, things like that. But that is not the driving force of the recollection of these things, correct?
No, you're right. You're right. And what is driving me at this moment is realizing that being afraid does not equal something bad.
That's right.
And I have had some really awful bad experiences, which I think is chapter 1 or chapter 2 in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But those are different. That is a different experience than what I usually have, which is that loving and beautiful and learning environment that I have, which I experienced while awake that I described earlier in the show. That is the majority of my contact, and that is absolutely beautiful. And yes, some of the things that have happened to me have been scary, and I was traumatized, but that doesn't mean that they were bad.
Yeah.
And that understanding is what drives me now.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. It's much more really... It is a grown-up moment when you realize that, like, your failures are your most beautiful thing. Like, your failures are truly your moment to shine, you know?
Yeah.
And that you have to learn to embrace them, and that you have to learn to say, like, Dad does to Bruce Wayne in Batman. Why do we fall? So we can get back up. You know?
Yeah.
But at the same token, I have to ask, because, like, even myself... I'm somebody with a pretty spiritually grounded background. I consider myself much more even in life, a run to the situation than from it. Mainly much more because you're going to avoid the crowd of momos. If you... If you run away from the problem, you're literally running with the crowd of panicked people. If you run to it, like, that crowd thins out pretty quick. You really find out who your friends are, like, real quick. You're going to find out who abandons you in your moment of need. Like, it's just going to be a quick Band-Aid, man. And I'd much rather have the quick Band-Aid and run to the problem in the situation and solve it than deal with the aftermath of 89 people trampling over me trying to get away from it. That's just my mentality. But at the same time, even with that grounding and that ingrained instinct to run to the problem, like when the kid falls off the playground, I don't run to the phone, I run to the kid to get the kid. Like, it's just, it's ingrained in me. I run to the emergency. But there are moments, Aaron, where, boy howdy, am I scared. Despite years of that, despite that being my knee-jerk reaction, I am to my core, to the pit of my stomach, scared. Scared. And that can be sometimes a little bit hard to tackle, even within myself. How do you deal with those moments? How do you, like, because, I mean, guaranteed some of your experiences are much worse than mine, man. How do you deal with that? How do you, I guess as Sev would say it, really learn to look at it through a different filter, you know?
Absolutely. That is, you know, I go back on my training. What are the things that I can do to move myself out of fight or flight? And that's going to be breathing. You know, you've got to use the use your biology the best that you can. You're short of breath and you're getting dizzy and your heart is pounding because you stop breathing. You got to breathe. And once you start to breathe, then you can think clearly and then you can judge the moment for what it is. And that is really huge, but it takes training and time and, you know, just working on that and, you know, it, being in those anxious and scary moments and learning that you're going to be okay. That's a big one. But then also, you know, when you are an experiencer, or you've had all these paranormal experiences, you have like extra senses, you can say. Like, I'm very empathic. I can feel the emotions of other people. And if the people around me are not angry or you know, lashing out in rage, I can feel that. And if they're just afraid, that makes a big difference. Or if I'm afraid and they're projecting love, I can feel that and it's okay. Yeah. You know, it just, there's so many different ways to calm yourself down. And sometimes you can't. And that's when it's important to have support around you, of friends. And, you know, the people that maybe have experienced these things too, the more and more experiencers I meet and get to know and just, you know, just bond with, the better I feel about everything that I've gone through. And I've heard that across the board from all experiencers.
That is fantastic. And that is so entirely empowering. I mean, most of, I taught religion and spirituality to junior high and high school students for almost a decade. And at the end of every year, my class started with two sentences. I guarantee you, I have gotten more out of this this year than you have from each and every one of you. Because whereas y'all had one teacher, I had 20. I had 20 people to learn from this year, to learn how this material is received, to learn how people receive each other, to learn how the world receives us. Not only that, but everything I taught you may be a lie. Go out and find out for yourself. I've had the opportunity to lie for you unabridged an hour and a half a week for a year. Go find out if I did.
Wow.
But that was also, you know, said with a huge ribbing point of view of, seriously, go out, explore. Be willing to say maybe that dude was wrong. be willing to say maybe that dude was right. And just be willing to maybe read what a dude says about something and not really care if he's wrong or right. But just understand the dude.
Absolutely. That's a big thing. And, you know, I don't know of any experience who has had exactly the same experience. We all come from completely different backgrounds and have a whole bunch of stuff to contribute to each other. But just saying, you know what, your truth matters to you.
Yeah.
And just allowing that to happen just brings so much comfort. And that, you know, I'm sure my training as a counselor has really helped me along with those things. But I also just come by that naturally. Like, whoever you are is totally awesome, and let's just be you.
Yeah.
And through that, and then having the other support around me, I've been allowed to become who I truly am as well. The more authentic I can be with myself, the better I feel. And I think that's true for everybody.
That is fantastically empowering to hear, Aaron, on any topic from any guest. Whenever you're talking to somebody who, especially right now, with everything going on with the pandemic, the lockdown, all that kind of stuff, to know that you were still fully able to finish off your book. You were able to get your book published. You were able to get your book distributed. You were able to get all of that done. And
I actually thank all of this time for that, because I don't know if I would have been able to do that without what's going on right now.
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely. Because like you were saying, you have a career. Like, you have a 40 hour.
Mm-hmm.
You.
Yes.
I myself, before the whole shutdown and everything, most of the time I spent 20 days, 25 days a month on the road, out setting up conferences and running AV for conferences, stuff like that. So for me, like, I had enough time to find a distribution deal for my music. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's what kind of time I had. So to find out that there are people like you out there finishing works like Dirty Little Secret, really getting to the bottom of who they are and why they are, and deciding to go with that pivot, deciding to lean into the pivot, it's such a hard decision to make. It really is. Whether it's starting your own business. I know so many people that pivoted and started their own business during this because they had the time. They had the idea. They had been working on it. Now they just, like, they had the time to be able to devote to it. You know? Before, mm-hmm. It was literally an 80-hour week if they put 2 hours a day into something. You know? So, for you, how does it feel to be getting this book out? Not just as an experiencer and a contactee, but somebody who has been working on this project and trying to get it done. How does it feel to pull the Band-Aid off?
You know, at first I was really scared, and that's part of the reason why it's titled Dirty Little Secret. Like, what is going to happen to me? Am I going to lose my job?
I think it's the most perfect title ever for this book, quite honestly. And for the story of an experiencer and a contactee coming into their own understanding of their experiences and their emotional understanding and their psychological understanding, and what their place in the world is now. Like, there is so much that is covered in this book. Like I said, in our private conversations, Aaron, like, it reads so well. It reads so easy. And it is so entirely unabridgedly honest at the same time. It's great. How long have you been working on this? How long have you, as a whole, been considering taking these experiences that you had to another level?
Oh, I think that it's been in my head for at least the last 10 years, and I've started and stopped and started and stopped, you know, just gathering up all of my dream journals and all of these experiences that I have, and I couldn't find this and I couldn't find that, and just putting it off for as long as I can. But it was really meeting Terry Lovelace, the writer of Incident at Devil's Den, and here in Roswell, and him telling me, you have to write, you can do it, you've got this, you can do it, you need to get your story out there.
Wow, that is fantastic.
It was under his support that I was able to just sit down and say, fine, I can do this. And I had been writing some articles, you know, each chapter was an article I had written, but he really pushed me to get it all together and get it out to the public in a book format.
Good.
And really, the more that it, you know, I talk about it, the more that it's out there and it's growing and people are starting to contact me about their own experiences, the more I feel that I am living the life that I am supposed to be living, you know, and that is really just the most amazing feeling ever. I am more me right now than I have ever been in my entire life.
Isn't it liberating to really just not give a damn, Aaron?
Absolutely.
Like literally, people do not realize, because, you know, hey, I'm a Texas Cajun, you know, I tend to be a little boisterous sometimes, but I'm loud and proud for a reason. I just don't give a damn. I do not have time for that game. I just don't. Like, there are truths to be told, and if you want to throw me over the side of the boat to a whale, so be it. Do it. I'm probably supposed to be over there telling it anyway, whatever, you know?
Exactly.
my wife watches the show Outlander, and the other day they were on a ship and they were referring to somebody as a Jonah, and I was like, oh, snap, dude, that is hardcore. Like, you are running from your mission. they figured you out. That's rough. There's a part in your book here that I really want to kind of get into real quick before we let you go. I know that we've kept you beyond an hour like we talked about, but dream journaling.
Yes.
How important for you, not only as a contactee, but as somebody who is remembering, recovering on the daily, sensorily, because it's something that I try to explain to people. Like, I make a lot of music involving brainwaves. I listen to a music at night that literally brings me to a point of deep relaxation and sleep with those kind of waves. But how important is it for you as far as your process to be dream journaling? To be trying to pull it, how do you go about keeping a dream journal, I guess, is what I'm asking, and how important is that to your process, Aaron?
Initially, it was extremely important, and unfortunately, I've kind of dropped the ball with that over the last few years, and I really regret it. But I, you know, about 20 years ago, I started, you know, really paying attention to my dreams. I had a notebook beside the bed, and I had trained myself within a few months to wake up every time I would dream and write it down. And it took a while to do that. However, sure, the information that came out was really, really interesting. I was able to look at patterns. You know, there's several dreams where I was lifted up to the ceiling, and now that makes sense because I understand that's how I, you know, left the house when I was 7 years old. And so I think, you know, my mind was trying to figure that out. There's several dreams where I was lifted up in a car, so that makes me think, did something happen to me when I was in a car at some point in time? You know, and just being able to track these things. And then, like, interdimensional travel, all these amazing things that I have witnessed and seen and participated in. And it just, the life outside of our waking lives is just so full and fascinating, and I love to do it anyways. At this point, I'm not necessarily keeping a journal by the bed, but I have a really good friend here in town that as soon as I wake up, I'll tell him, oh my gosh, I just dreamed this, and I write it all down.
Yeah.
Granted, I lose that stuff, but at least I'm able to process it with him. And, you know, he does the same with me. I just dream these things. What do you think? You know, and it's absolutely vital for somebody who's trying to remember.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. For me, and I've talked to Sev about this numerous times, I used to actively do dream work, as I called it. I would go to sleep with a task.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently I tell people I wire patch bays in my sleep, like racks of equipment, like what are behind me. Like I build them in my sleep. Like it's kind of like counting sheep for me. That's what I do, is build racks and patch them and wire them. You know, like that's my counting backwards, or going to my special place. And it's, for me, going through dream, number one is that fact of everything that my brain did not get to process today, it now gets a chance to figure out. Because at the time that it experienced that, it was busy, you know, breathing and making sure that my legs kept me upright and moving forward. It was doing a lot of things just to, like, live and exist, much less absorb something in the moment. It's not that it didn't see it. It's that it didn't fully process all of it. Now, imagine that being kind of like the buffer memory in your computer. Like, it's still kind of there, you know? When you go to sleep, now you get a chance to kind of filter all of that. And you get to filter it through experience, and you get to filter it through emotion, and you get to do that unabridged. So you really do get a very deep and very interesting insight to things, like you were saying, once you learn to realize you're dreaming.
And that, yes, absolutely.
That's absolutely really the key, is learning to realize you're dreaming and then going, okay. And just being okay with it. Now observe.
Right.
And be okay with just observing. Like, hey, you want to get to the point of playing with things later, go ahead. That's a whole nother experience because, yeah, it leads to full lucid dreaming, full ability to, like I said, go searching specifically for answers to things. Going and searching specifically for locations of things. Something that you've lost. Something that, you know, you've been trying to find. It's amazing some of the mental work that you can do while you're actively asleep. Once you've learned to flex that muscle, and like you said, you've stopped keeping your dream diaries. I myself stopped doing that actively as I went to sleep, like giving myself a task or a mission, or like, hey, tonight we're going to work on this. You know, it's kind of like just going, hey, I'm not going to the gym today. I'm just tired. And then you're tired the next day, and then, you know, you go Friday and,
exactly,
and Sunday, and you were feeling pretty good. So, you know, I'll have some waffles Monday morning on the way to work. You know, like.
Absolutely. It is a mental regimen, and,
yeah.
And you can definitely push boundaries if you are vigilant, but. Hey, you know what? Life happens.
Yeah.
Life happens.
It does. And the thing is, you know, once you flex that muscle, once you've had that muscle working, it's just like going to the gym. It's going to hurt for a little while, but it's not going to be nearly as tough as it was the first time, folks. And even myself, I'm trying to give myself the mental pep talks and the spiritual pep talks right now of like, it's not going to be as rough as it was the first time, Chris. It's okay. All right, relax. Sleep. Aaron, what for you separates, the last couple of questions before we let you go this evening, what separates these experiences for you from dream and from nightmare?
That is really at the crux of an experiencer's conundrum right there. Was I just dreaming? Did this really happen? Or am I recalling something from before? And yeah. Sometimes it's very hard to separate that out. However, oftentimes if it is an experience that is really happening and I wake up, I will have marks and I have outside proof.
Sure.
Or I will have had, you know, somebody that I know was also on ship and say, hey, did you, did something happen to you last night? Because it happened to me. And so yeah. There's all of these different tells that I have in order to be able to see if it was real, if it was a memory, or if I was just dreaming something strange. One of the things that happens to me now, and, you know, it's only been a year since I've had it, but they take my nose ring.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so if I wake up and if I brush my nose when I'm sleeping and the ring comes out, it hurts. It does not feel good to just rip your nose ring out. So
yeah.
To wake up knowing that the ring is gone and it didn't wake me up hurting, I know that something happened.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that is that's a pretty visceral physical manifestation at that point. That's not... And, you know, there can, of course, be the case made that the human mind can do all kinds of things. I mean, yeah, hey, the human mind can do all kinds of things. I'm not lying. You can heal yourself through thinking. You can heal yourself through listening to certain frequencies. They've shown that putting the lower frequencies of a cat purr underneath the music and burn wards causes people to heal slightly faster. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that is quantifiably proven by science when it comes to these things and the small perturbations of the world around us. When you start talking about spooky action at a distance and quantum entanglements and the fact of my electron shield mixing with somebody in Taiwan right now, you know,
right.
Like these are known quantities of physics. So, to say that, you shared a dream with somebody or that you were somewhere and had a different experience than somebody else, I do not doubt that. I do not doubt the fact that you were on a different vibrational level and saw something else going on or felt something else going on, you know? So yeah, for me, it's something I can't doubt people. I can't, because I've had the experience. I've had the thing that people would go, yeah, okay. All right. All right. Crazy dude.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Your shot at the pool table, please go ahead. Shoot. Keep shooting. You know,
shut your mouth. Again.
Yeah. Please just stop talking. It's very uncomfortable right now. But that is exactly what this show is about, is the fact that we have to be willing to have those uncomfortable conversations, Aaron, as a society, as a people, as people isolated amongst ourselves. We have to be willing to explore this. We have to be willing to explore ourselves that deeply. Much like the report at the beginning of the show, we have to be willing to explore the fact, has our fear actively been hijacked? And have we allowed it to be? That mechanism that, like you were saying earlier, really is a beautiful thing. Like, fear kept us alive for millennia. The fight or flight response is probably one of the largest instructional tools in the history of nature, period. Because
yes.
Like that's what led to our survival from wild animals in the dark, you know, things like that. So it's a good thing. It's not something to necessarily be afraid of, but it can easily be hijacked.
Yes, it can.
And
yes, it can. And then we get used to it.
Yeah.
And then we live in this heightened level of anxiety.
Exactly.
And are always on edge. And it makes you wonder why do we have to live like this? I don't think we do. And I don't think we're supposed to.
No, we definitely are not supposed to at all, number one. And number two, it is definitely designed that way. As someone who has worked on both sides of the media, it is designed that way. It is designed to avoid the conversation and focus on the fear. It is designed to heighten that. It is designed to divide. And that's a dangerous point to be at. And we as a people, we as a humanity need to learn, as we said in our last episode with Sev Talk, we need to learn to raise our vibrational level. We need to learn to be willing to think positive. It is an active thought. It really is. Like when you wake up in the morning, you know, like you wake up in the morning and you have the choice whether to go like, man, today sucks. Or to be like, okay, you know, some options of things to do today. Here we go.
Absolutely, we have that choice.
Yeah, it really is the Fight Club protocol of Operation Chaos. You choose your level of involvement. It's happening whether you're there or not. So the question is, are you involved? Are you willing to be involved? Are you willing to see that it's going on? Are you willing to listen to stories like Aaron Montgomery's and Sev Talks and my crazy self? Are you willing to listen to these stories? Are you willing to look at your own life and maybe consider some of those moments through a different filter, folks? Those are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. We have unabridged time right now to make that pivot, to learn to ask ourselves instead of focusing on horrible things. And it's sad that we focus on horrible things, Aaron. You know?
Well, it's all, you know, horrible things are around us all the time. And that's, you know, part of the programming, I think, that is going on right now. And for whatever reason, it's important to keep us this way. So, you know, I myself don't watch the news. I myself do not participate in those things. And I think that is one of the ways that I am able to keep my vibration at the level that I am.
Yeah, and absolutely. If that is what it takes to be, I myself am as politically as agnostic as you can get. I vote as purple as possible. most of mine don't even have a color associated with them. I think Ralph Nader might have been the last party color I had associated with anything. But on another thought, Aaron, as we let you go this evening and for this episode, because we'd absolutely love to have you back to discuss this more, I'd love to have an episode with you and Sev where we really, start digging into the world of the experiencer and how many of us are experiencers without ever even realizing it. It's so exciting to have books like yours come out, to have stories like yours come out, to have people like Terry Lovelace out there backing you, encouraging you, pushing you forward. What's next, Aaron?
Oh, I've got so many different things, so many irons in the fire right now. One idea that I am working on and slowly starting to gather stories from others about is how this ET experience does affect different types of relationships in your life. So, I mean, we already started to talk about that in the show, but I actually want to compile different people's stories and look and evaluate how does contact affect us, you know, with our relationships in particular. That's one thing that I have going on. Another thing is it started off as an online class about how to create boundaries psychically.
Wow.
And so that is in the works now as well.
Fantastic.
Stuff about past lives. I mean, that all sorts of things going
on. Do you have any kind of timetable on the release of that class or anything like that, or when it might be available?
Well, it's currently in the process of becoming a book.
Awesome.
And it is... I haven't worked on it.
Well, that's okay.
It's back from the editor, and I've been sitting on it, and I need to work on it again. So I was hoping to have it released by December, but we shall see.
Whenever you are ready with that, we absolutely want to have you on. That is a regular topic of conversation on our show, is stuff like that. So I thank you so much for coming on tonight, for being so unabridged with your answers. So honest emotionally with everything. I know that there was a lot deeper that we could have gone in a lot of topics for a lot of people, but there is a lot in your book when you start going through. And it's one of those books that's small enough to be an afternoon read, folks, which is what it was for me. And I went through and here are questions that I asked as we went through the book this evening, that kind of stuff. But that's just my first peruse of the book. And I definitely want to read it again because it's one of those, like I said, as you read it, it really does give some very visceral personal reaction to these situations. And to hear you talk about the way you view it now versus some of the raw lens of experience that is shown in this book is fantastic. So kudos to you. Fantastic writing.
Well, thank you.
Great job on the release. Thank you so much for coming on the show and being so open, being so honest. I know that you have had a crazy promotion schedule with everything. So, next time, let's definitely start getting into some deep, deep, deep topics. And like I said, maybe have a double header with you and Sev on at the same time. That would be super fun. So
I would absolutely love that.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm sure that we can both make that happen between us. So before I let you go, please, it is absolutely time for nothing less than shameless self-promotion, Aaron. And that's okay. It's all right. I'm going to shamelessly self-promote at the end. That's what the end of the show is about. So I wouldn't have you on if you weren't doing something in the world. And if you're doing something in the world, then you have something to promote. Like, I don't have people on that aren't doing something. So, absolutely. Let everybody know where they can find out more from Aaron Montgomery, where they can go to get, other than dudesandbeer.com/store, where they can go to get their copy of Dirty Little Secret, Confessions of an Alien Contactee, and where they can find out more about you.
All right. Yes, you can get my book through Dudes and Beer, and you can get my book through Amazon. It is available in paperback and audio, not audio, paperback and ebook format. We are working on the audiobook right now.
Sweet.
As we speak. So,
I was going to say, if you need help with that, I know an audio guy.
I know you do.
See? Shameless.
Yes, you do. Say shameless plugging. Of course, anybody who has had experiences or wants to reach out to me, you absolutely can through Facebook. I am under Aaron Montgomery. You can also find my book page, Dirty Little Secret. There are some other pages that come up with that name, so make sure you find my photograph before you go exploring what you may find there.
Yeah.
Then also, I do have a website that I share with another experiencer, and that website is www.peoplesouterdimension.net. And on that website, you will find several articles that I've written about, you know, ghostly experiences that I've had. There's all the radio shows that I've done. There's my friends' YouTube channels are on there, as well as the opportunity to have, you know, I do tarot readings. I do, you know, past life readings. I do healings. All sorts of things are promoted on that site as well.
Yeah, that's a great looking site. We have it up on screen right now.
Awesome. And there's also a page called Orb Studies, and this to me is really exciting because both my friend and I have motion sensor cameras at our house. His is outdoors. He lives in Massachusetts. His is outdoors and gets really interesting things. My camera is in my bedroom.
Oh.
And the very interesting things that pop up at night, very, very interesting things that I do not have explanations for.
Once again, when you're looking for dirty little secrets on Facebook, folks, look for her picture. But yeah, I mean, this is a fantastic site. I would love to have you guys on to talk about this, what y'all are doing there, everything else. I mean, because like I said, it's really about trying to expose people to these truths with a capital T. These things that are out there that perhaps they have not explored, perhaps, you know, even no shame in saying it, folks, perhaps you've been shamed into not exploring, you know?
Absolutely. That happens, I think, much more often than not.
I absolutely believe that. One of the things I am thankful for more than anything, and I really think it's the fact that my mom was just happy I was reading a damn book. I mean, granted, most of the books I brought back from the public library were like, how to build lasers. And books on rocketry and things like that. Like, I was checking out things that no seventh grader should be checking out. But in addition to that, it was books on, like, the history of Dracula. And, there was one on lycanthropy that I remember checking out numerous times. And, you know, amulets and talismans and just all this weird crap, dude. From seventh grade on, that was the stuff that I checked out from the public library, and she did not discourage it. And I think it was, like I said, really more the fact she was just happy that I was reading a book. There wasn't a comic book or an instruction manual, you know. Don't discourage your kids. Like you were saying earlier, if your kid is saying that there's something there, don't discount it. I know that sounds creepy, folks, but don't discount it.
Actually really lived by that through my life is, okay, what are you saying? What are they saying? What do they look like? You know, don't just say, no, it's just your imagination.
Absolutely.
That really does damage. I mean, to me, that's very damaging.
Yes, most definitely. Because, hey, like, I've had people ask me on job site, you talking to me? Nope. Because I work things out loud while I'm working. Like, I talk my way through things, you know? I'm not talking to you. I don't want to talk to you right now. I'm busy with this. So we have to remember that we're all in a different world. We're all entangled with something else, every one of us. So we have to be willing to accept that. We have to be ready to accept that. And when physics is telling us that on the regs, when things are showing that more and more, I mean, good God, they were just announcing the other day from the Large Hadron Collider that they were getting ready to possibly be able to prove that other dimensions were there through leaking of gravitational field into parallel dimensions through creating many black holes. And it's like, what? This is the science that they're doing. So when they're showing the fact that, like, gravity can leak into a parallel dimension that's obviously there, don't discount that.
That's right. That means there's other dimensions.
That's right. That means that there is something else there. I don't know what it is. They don't know what it is even, but it's there and it's quantifiable. And that is becoming more and more the norm than the paranorm, folks. That is becoming more and more. There are more and more scientists who are willing to postulate these things and willing to take on the hypothesis and put hypothesis to test, and are open-minded and open-hearted about the results and willing to say, okay, this changes the paradigm. And that's what's important. And to know that there are people like you out there, Aaron, sharing their stories, shaking the paradigm, making the paradigm, and reshaping it as we move forward, that gives me great heart. That makes me feel so good, to know that there are people like you that have had these experiences that are coming forward and willing to share them. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. That's what I'm doing. Well, my thing.
Keep doing it. While you're online, checking out everything over at peoplesouterdimension.net. Make sure to stop on by. Please do hold the line while we close things out, Aaron.
All right.
While you're online checking all that out, make sure to stop on by our sponsor, PodcastCadet.com, of course, as well as Amazon Audible. Dudes and Beer is now available on Amazon Audible. And, of course, you can always get your 30-day free trial of Audible using audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer. Head on over to audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer. It'll take you right there. You get 30 days free. Stop on by dudesandbeer.com for all of the episodes, for all we've rebooted the world news section, folks, so all kinds of stuff. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.